welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today on the podcast, I talk with Andy Hunt, the creator of Necronomicards, a horror-themed card game. We talk about starting off freelancing while working at a sushi restaurant, the challenges of working for a startup, balancing a family, a full-time job, and freelance, all while starting Necronomicards, and more, all right after this. I want to thank our friends over at Jack Prince for sponsoring this episode. Whatever you need printed, they can do it. Do you need stickers? Jack Prince can do it. Do you need t-shirts? Jack Prince can do it. Embroidered hats, business cards, banners? Jack Prince can do it. They make great stuff at a great price. Speaking of banners, Jack Prince has their lowest prices on banners ever right now. Some of them are up to 70% off. I just looked up the cost of an 8-foot by 5-foot banner. How much do you think it should cost? $200? $300? More? You can get it at Jack Prince for just $70. While we're talking about great offers, let's talk about the fact that Jack Prince is offering a free silver ink upgrade going on right now. But it's not just on silver ink. If you're looking to get something embroidered, you can get free silver thread too. So when you get something printed or embroidered, now through the end of the year, add some silver ink into that design. If you love pocket-sized notebooks, check out Jack Prince Pocket Notes. They come with tons of great options, making them perfect for gifts, giveaways, branding, and custom office supplies. Custom pocket notebooks are sized for quick sketching and note-taking. Plus, unlike other printers who, you know, make you design around their logo and have all those parameters like that, Jack Prince builds their custom notebooks from the ground up, giving you the entire cover to customize in vivid full color. Jack Prince makes great, affordable stuff for designers like you and I. They focus on quality and customer service, and have been loyal Creative South sponsors for years. Why not pick them next time you need stickers, banners, or pocket notebooks printed? Plus, Jack Prince is giving you a great discount. You can save up to $75 on your next order. Just use promo code CS16PODCAST at checkout, or visit jack.ink/design. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Then head over to creativesouth.com right now and get your Creative South tickets. Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. Plus, when you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. All right, Andy, thank you for joining me tonight.
Hey, Jason, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So let's start off. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a tiny town that no one has ever heard of before called Denton, North Carolina, like Denton, Texas, but the opposite.
I can't even say that I've heard of Denton, Texas.
So. Fair enough. It's just as small, probably. Yeah, I had like 100 people in my graduating class in high school, and that was a public school.
Sure.
I was kind of the oddball artsy kid in a town full of typical...
Not so artsy kids.
Yeah, typical not so artsy southern folk. So
I know that feeling well.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I went to most of high school in central Kentucky. And my class would have been about the same size as yours, and I had two strikes against me. I was, you know, the oddball artsy kid, and I was not from the town originally.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Why did you move to that area?
My dad got a job there.
Gotcha. Yeah, I lived there all my life, but when I went to high school, the high school was actually a combination of people from Denton and people from an equally small town called Silver Valley.
Oh,
so
wow.
So even then it was still only 99 or 100 people in my graduating class. And it was this interesting culture shock of people who didn't know each other from equally small towns all of a sudden being shuffled together. So
God, yeah. So how many people had to drop out of your high school class because they got pregnant?
Oh God, yeah. I probably started with a class of about 150.
That's the way mine was. It was like, and it's, you know, I now with Facebook and all, like, you end up finding these people. I'm like, I don't even remember the fact that you got pregnant in high school.
Yeah, well,
but I'm doing the math.
Most of the people that I went to high school with are probably still in Denton, so it's easy to keep up with them.
So you escaped.
I escaped. Yeah. I moved off to the mountains and went to college at Appalachian State in Boone.
Gotcha.
Also a very small town, small school.
Yes, but at least I've heard of that school, so.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a decent football team. And some very embarrassing recruiting videos that went viral one year. So
I don't know about the recruiting videos, but
that's fine.
I do know about the football team. You don't want to relive it, huh?
I can't remember what the if you Google, like, it was something like Appalachian is hot, hot, hot or something like that. Like, it was really good.
Oh, really geez.
Good. Yeah. But they had a wonderful art program, so I'm glad I went.
So when you were studying, you know, there, were you doing design or were you doing just fine arts and then kind of stumbled into design?
I went with the intention of getting a design degree. They have a graphic design program that's sandwiched into the fine arts program.
Sure.
So I did as much fine arts stuff as I had time to do, but I was pretty much sleeping in the art department trying to do multiple graphic design classes at once per semester. And I had illusions of getting a creative writing minor for a while, so I had no free time. That didn't work out. I dropped that pretty quick.
Damn overachiever.
Yeah, that's me.
So you go through school, decide that creative writing is not in the cards as a minor, and what do you end up doing when you get out of school?
I really piddled around a lot. I was pretty aimless when I first graduated. I won't name any names, but I didn't have the best advisor when I was in college, so when I got out, I moved to Greensboro, North Carolina for a while, just because I had friends there. That was the only real reason. And when I got there, I realized that the design job market was pretty much non-existent. So
Greensboro is not exactly the booming metropolis for work.
No, it's a reasonably large city for North Carolina, but it's all spread out and there's not much going on. I've heard that there's more now than there was then. I know that if nothing else, there's a like a small startup hub and some other stuff like that going on. But at the time, I just freelanced mostly for, like, Greensboro is really close to High Point, which is where the big national furniture market is. So I freelanced for some furniture companies, which was a real thrill.
I can imagine.
Yeah, photoshopping, catalog photography of chairs.
In different settings that don't exist.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly just cutting white backgrounds.
I may or may not have done a lot of that before.
Yeah, and then I earned the bulk of my money from managing a sushi restaurant and doing other completely unrelated jobs like that.
Okay, you got to fill me in on that. So how is it you're doing freelance design and managing a sushi restaurant? The freelance design I get, and don't get me wrong, I love sushi, but
sure, I completely stumbled into that job. I was waiting tables to earn side money, and then got a job at a sushi place because I knew the manager and was really good at waiting tables. So I got promoted to management and pretty quickly learned that it's slow enough during the day that you can secretly do other things in the office at the same time, such as freelance graphic design and web design projects.
Not so, that we encourage people to do that during their day job.
Of course not.
Unless you're at a sushi restaurant. That's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, exactly. Unless it's 15 years ago and you can't be held accountable for it now.
Yeah, I don't think there's a legal statute of limitations on that.
No, exactly.
maybe unethical, but
my conscience is clear, man. I feel fine.
Hey, you know, I worked in the restaurant business. You go through enough stuff there that I think unless you are murdering someone, your conscience should be clear.
Exactly.
And then even sometimes that is negotiable.
Oh, sure. I've had those customers many times.
Yeah. Yeah. Or employees.
Yes. Also true.
So you're freelancing, you're managing a sushi restaurant. At what point do you realize something's got to change? You can't keep slinging around raw fish.
It didn't take long. The whole time I was doing that, I was wishing that I was doing design full time. So I had the choice of either moving in one direction towards Winston-Salem, which for whatever reason had more design jobs, or moving towards the Triangle area, which is Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill.
Sure.
And so I moved to a very small town with really cheap rent that was kind of in the middle between Greensboro and the Triangle area, and did whatever I could to try to find some full-time design work. It didn't take too long. I hopped through a couple really bad, like, entry-level jobs, a sign shop, doing vehicle wraps and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then I actually wound up spending about 4 years doing design for the parent company of Adam and Eve.
They have a parent company?
They have a parent company.
Not that I know who Adam and Eve is.
Uh-huh,
Mom, if you're listening, I'm a perfect child. And it's immaculate conception that I have children.
Yes. But believe it or not, it was a pretty straightforward corporate design gig.
Just happened to sell dildos.
Yeah. Yeah. The American Challenge is a big seller.
Oh, God.
had a product called
the Accommodator. I don't know the product name, so.
Yeah, that was, if nothing else, it was a highly entertaining job. And I learned a lot about being on an in-house team and doing, e-commerce, web design, and stuff like that, which has helped me a lot because most of my full-time work since then has been in marketing for e-commerce companies or in-house teams of e-commerce companies. So it was actually a good place to start, just not a typical place to start.
Yeah. So how did you explain that one to your parents?
I lied for a long time. or I just said the name of the parent company, PHE, because they had no idea what that was. So
I could
just skate under the radar for a while. And then, I think somebody asked my mom where I worked.
This could go in a weird direction. Be careful where you pause.
Oh, no. Just don't be careful where you edit me. I'm holding you accountable for this. My mom told like a hairdresser or somebody that I worked for PHE, and they lived close to the town where the headquarters was and knew who that was.
Knew what PHE was.
Yeah. So my mom did some Googling. In a cold sweat. And the cat was out of the bag.
So Thanksgiving dinner was a little awkward that year.
It was, yeah. Yeah, everybody was nervous unwrapping Christmas presents. It was...
Oh, see, now this is where the power turns, though. I was thinking you would be the one nervous, and they're the ones nervous.
Yeah, like I said, my conscience is clear. It would take a lot to make me nervous.
I don't know. I'm by no means am I prude, but that's not something I want to discuss with my parents.
Oh no, it was never a big topic of conversation. We always just kind of skated past it as fast as possible. How was work? Work was good. Okay.
So look at the 5-star rating this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. What accessories go along with that?
Now, is this jewelry? I don't understand.
Sure, it's a type of ring. It is a type of ring. So sure, it's jewelry, Mom.
Name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This episode is going to earn its explicit rating.
You know, we haven't actually... Well, no, I said dildo. That probably would do it. So, I'm definitely not letting my mom know about this one. Not that I think she's listened to more than one of my episodes. So, you work there for 4 years. You get a strong background in doing e-commerce and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to segue off of this before my face turns as red as the glass of wine I'm drinking.
Fair enough.
What do you end up doing after that?
I went to a small email marketing, how should I even describe the company? It's an agency in Chapel Hill that does email marketing almost exclusively for the automotive industry. And then they also have a software platform that they use to do like the sending and all the analytics and everything.
Okay, so they're monitoring the drip campaigns and all that fun stuff.
Exactly.
They've got their own proprietary stuff with it.
Yep. And gotcha. The owners got their start in the automotive industry, so they've kind of stuck to that niche because when you build your software platform around it, it's really easy to build a product that's perfect for like sending out service reminder emails and automotive sales emails and stuff like that.
Sure.
So a lot of what I learned from working at Adam and Eve kind of crossed over into that because it was putting together tons of sales emails and just taking products that all kind of look the same. And, you know, an email full of cars and you've got a dealership telling you that they have to have 20 cars in that email and all 20 of those cars have to have identical bursts so that they all stand out. Wink. You have to try to get kind of clever with making things look good.
Everything has to look the same, but you need to make them all stand out.
Yes, equally. Everything needs to equally be the center of attention.
There is no hierarchy allowed.
No. But nothing nothing can blend in.
Yeah, I've had those jobs too.
Yeah.
So,
but thankfully,
a lot of headbanging.
Yeah, thankfully, we also did some work for the actual manufacturer, so I got to do some really fun projects for like Mercedes and Toyota and all the major manufacturers, or not all the major manufacturers, but a lot of the major car manufacturers.
Gotcha.
So that was fun.
So you move on from there. At what point do you end up in your current role?
I hopped around a little bit more. I worked for a little startup for a while that I was only there for about 9 months, and I was literally like hire number one. And after I was there for less than a year, they ran out of funding, so I got dropped. And almost immediately, like I interviewed around a lot of different places in the area and got really lucky, and there was an opening at a company in Durham called Bronto Software, which is where I am now.
Sure. Well, let's go back just a second about the startup.
Sure.
You know, what was it like working in that startup environment? Because I get asked about that a lot of, you know, from kids coming out of school of, you know, should I go to work for a startup? And I've never worked for a startup in that sense of it. I've worked for companies that are new, but they're not quite the same.
Sure.
So how does that dynamic work? I realize, you know, every company is different, but.
Yeah. I've actually worked for a lot of companies that called themselves startups that I wouldn't necessarily consider a startup. I think a lot of people use the phrase startup to try to get away with being sloppy. But this was a true startup. There were three of us, including the two owners, one of which is one of the owners is a developer, the other was a financial guy. And then they brought me on to be the lead designer and to try to put together marketing packages that would attract like design focused young startups to using the product that we were making, which was like a software platform to try to help other startups get off the ground faster.
Sure. Since you're one of, you know, you're pretty much employee number one, aside from, you know, the two founders, like you said, you know, when it comes time for them trying to get more funding and stuff like that, are you brought in on that or is that still
I was
you know, between them?
I was brought in on just about every aspect. I mean, I had to do so much more than what my actual job title entails because,
sure,
you know, there are so few of us. So we would go to conferences and I would be the guy running the booth and lugging stuff around and all that stuff. And then whenever we were doing pitches to investors, I would put together a lot of the presentations and stuff like that. So I really got to see every side of the operation, which is fun.
Gotcha. So what did you learn from that experience?
To never be put off by anything that someone asks you to do if they're paying you. Because I had to do a lot of crap that I did not want to do, but there's, you know, no choice.
I
spent many late nights doing glorified data entry and stuff like that, but
sure.
You do what you have to. You look over at your resume wistfully and say, that says lead designer. It still says lead designer. It doesn't say intern. I'm okay. This is good. This is where I
say janitor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Recycling guru.
So
you transition out of that. You end up at Bronto, where you're at now. Mm-hmm. And how long have you been at Bronto?
Been at Bronto about a little over a year and a half.
Okay.
And the entire time, like starting early on at PHE all the way up through now, I've tried to find ways to supplement everything else with passive income and to also delve into more creative stuff,
mm-hmm,
to, you know, doing e-commerce stuff all day, which is, in a way, what I'm doing now, too. I'm in the marketing department of a company that makes e-commerce email software. So it's not too far off from where I was with the car dealership job. We just have a much broader base of clients.
Sure. So, and you're doing UI and UX over there, right?
I'm doing UI. I'm doing a little bit of UX. I'm doing a lot of front-end development. I'm doing print design. I'm laying out white papers. I'm designing infographics. I'm doing a lot of different stuff.
I was about to say you're multitasking in several various arenas there.
I am. Yeah. Right now I'm doing a lot of front-end development because we're trying to get a refresh on the corporate site launched before the end of this year.
Sure. So how do you feel, without jeopardizing your job, because you come from a design background, but mm-hmm, how do you feel about the front end of dev work? Is that something that you're comfortable with? Obviously you have to do it for your job, so you get more comfortable with it, but
I am. That's actually something that I've done for a long time. Just it varied from job to job how much time I actually spent doing it. But sure. I mean, I was a really nerdy kid. I started tinkering with HTML when I was like probably 13 or 14. So it's something that I really enjoy doing, and I'm getting more and more into like WordPress design and PHP and gotcha, jQuery type stuff because I like the problem solving aspect, mm-hmm, of it. I like that somebody says, I want this website to do this really cool whiz bang flashy thing, and you have to try to figure out how to realistically make that happen. That is the technical term.
Okay.
Yeah. If you if you go to like Stack Overflow and search whiz bang flashy thing, that's what you're gonna get.
I was about to say, if I go there or GitHub, can I just download a snippet of that
and you can
plug it in?
Okay, yep.
Good.
Yeah, but it's fun. I just like the it's always a puzzle, and it's often a really frustrating puzzle, which was something I've dealt with most of today with a freelance project, is half the time, whenever you make something work, it breaks everything else. So,
gotcha. So you're at Bronto now, mm-hmm, you're still doing freelance stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get into Necronomicon cards in a second,
that's
but
true,
you know, with those two alone, plus you've got, you know, wife and, you have one or two kids?
I have a 2.5-year-old daughter.
Okay, so a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
right at the perfect age where you're about to get some wonderful temper tantrums.
Oh, already have. You don't have to tell me.
Oh, no, they get worse. Just wait. Trust me. They call them the terrible twos. It really doesn't hit bad until about 3.5.
Awesome. Good to hear.
Yeah, yeah. So have fun with that.
Yeah. You could have let me live in ignorant bliss until it happened.
No, I felt you needed the warning so you could start training your liver a little better to deal with it.
Fair enough.
So, you know, those two things alone, plus your family, how are you finding time to balance all of that? You know, work-life balance and, you know, not drive yourself insane.
Boy, that's a great question.
Is the answer not well?
To be completely honest, I can't say that it's always an even balance. And sometimes I feel like you have to have the side projects to kind of escape from, like, if the full-time job isn't as fun as you want it to be at the moment and stuff like that, I like to keep myself really busy. I'm the type of person where if I have a lot of free time to sit around and watch movies or whatever, I start feeling like I should be doing something more productive, I guess. So
could you rub some of that off on me?
No.
Or at least teach me how to do that.
I'll do my best.
Okay.
It's probably undiagnosed ADD. But the balance is the toughest part. Like, I really do have to actively make myself schedule time where I'm not going to do anything and I'm just going to spend time with my family. And thankfully my parents are completely obsessed with my daughter. So occasionally, like this past weekend, they run off with her. So my wife and I can actually go out for dinner or see a movie or something.
And not just talk about getting diapers and what finger food she's going to eat this week.
Yeah, exactly. But it is tough. It really is tough because I try to, or I don't know if I'd say I even tried to stay busy all the time. Just the way my brain is wired, I pretty much stay busy all the time.
Okay. So you're doing all that, and then you go ahead and you throw Necronomicon cards into the mix.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Well, so like I was saying before, I started out doing a lot of t-shirt design and stuff like that for passive income.
Sure.
And doing that kind of stuff, I kind of honed my illustration skills. And so I was trying to find freelance work where I could do really fun illustration projects and make use of that. And I couldn't find anything really cool that I could really get my hands on. So I came up with an idea a few years ago for a mobile game that I wanted to make. And I was going to use that as an excuse to make the work for myself that I wanted to do.
Okay.
I'm a big believer in that. If you can't find the work that you want to do, then I just try to figure out a way to make that work for myself.
Sure.
And so I was going to make this mobile game. At the time, I was calling it Abracapocus, which is a reference to an old Bugs Bunny cartoon where he gets a magic spell match with Dracula. I was completely...
I remember that cartoon well.
Yeah. So it was going to be a really cute, cartoony little game about monsters and mythological creatures and stuff. And I had all the designs laid out for it, but I couldn't find a developer. And I tried to raise money to hire a developer, and nobody wanted to give me money because I didn't already have a developer. So I was kind of in an endless cycle. So I put that away for a long time and eventually realized if I made it a card game instead of a mobile game, I could just do everything myself. I could design the cards. I could illustrate the cards. I didn't have to worry about development. I just had to figure out how to make the game work as a card game.
Well, let's talk about that, because, you know, I'm assuming you don't have a lot of background in game theory and things like that. So
No. How
did you figure that out?
A lot of trial and error. I have some really nerdy friends who like to sit down and drink way too much beer and play card games. And so I had a lot of experience on the player end of playing card games and video games and stuff like that. So it was really just a matter of sitting down and taking a ton of index cards and making rough copies of what the game would be like and playing it and seeing what worked and what didn't work. And
sure,
just playing it until you find something that sucks and you throw that out and try to rework everything until it's fun to play.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So the illustrations themselves, are those all kind of a holdover from the Abracapocus stuff, or did you go back and rework everything?
I went back and reworked everything because one of my goals with Abracapocus was to make it a kid-friendly game, because I really like the idea of making something for young people that had lots of weird monsters and stuff in it, because that's the kind of stuff I was really into when I was a kid.
Gotcha.
But then when I switched it over to being a card game, the audience for that type of game is more people in like our age range. So I felt more free to get darker and weirder with the art, and that style of art's a lot more fun for me anyway. I've always been really into this weird, creepy illustration. Like the I think the first time I read the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark books when I was little. Do you remember those books?
Yeah.
Those illustrations stuck with me my whole life, and I've always loved that style of just weird, creepy stuff. So yeah, I reworked everything to be a little bit darker.
Gotcha. I'm assuming that, you know, based on the name Necronomicards and these weird creepy monsters and all this, that you have a love of horror too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been a huge horror fan ever since I was, I don't know, really, really young, way too young. I have
an inappropriate age to watch horror movies.
Absolutely. I'm the youngest of five, and
oh wow, bless your mother's heart.
Yeah. And my youngest sibling is 10 years older than me because my parents had kids in previous marriages and then married each other and had me 10 years later.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was a little kid while my siblings were going into high school. So I was sneaking into the back of the room and hiding in the dark while they watched Nightmare on Elm Street and stuff like that I wasn't supposed to see.
Yeah, that's not terrifying for an 8-year-old at all.
Oh, of course not. I didn't have nightmares about monsters coming up out of the middle of a waterbed for like my entire adolescent life.
No, yeah. To this day, I still have never seen all of Cujo. Can't watch it.
Yeah, that's a rough one. That's really a rough one.
I can't. I don't even know how old I was when that came out. Not very old. But yeah, for some reason, my parents watched it and had me there with them. And terrified.
Yeah, I can't remember what year that was. It was mid-80s, I think. I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, cold chills. Like, I can watch The Exorcist all the time.
Sure.
Cujo? Nope. Pet Sematary kind of creeps me out a little bit, too.
I was just about to say Pet Sematary was the one for me. Like, there are just some scenes in that movie that still really, really get me. And not much gets me, but that little kid with the scalpel or X-Acto knife or whatever it was, cutting the back of Herman Munster's foot when he walks by the bed.
Yeah,
that was
man, I forgot that was Herman Munster.
Yeah, it was Fred Gwynn.
Yeah,
yeah, that freaked me out so bad.
Yeah, that and the scene in that where I can't remember what the mom's name who died, her sister, the one that had the spinal meningitis, and they showed that thing.
Oh God, yeah.
That was. I'll watch a slasher film all day and not be phased, but that bothers me so much.
Yeah, the same way.
So you've done all these illustrations, you're thinking all this stuff up, and then, you know, when you go to put it out, do you realize right away, hey, this is going to cost me a lot more than I got in my bank account? Or how did the Kickstarter for it come about, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, that's pretty close to how it came about. I really just wanted to validate myself and put out enough copies of the game that I could say I had put the game out.
Mm-hmm.
So my plan was to put it up on Kickstarter for a few thousand dollars, enough to get like maybe 100 decks of the game printed. and ship it out to those people and say, yay, I did it, and like not really make a profit or anything. Just have the gratification of making the thing from start to finish and putting it in other people's hands. Mm. So I spent, 4 or 5 months putting together all the materials for the Kickstarter campaign. That's a full-time job. Like, I never would have realized how much work has to go into putting together an effective Kickstarter campaign. Just trying to put together a video where I don't sound like a total jackass, trying to explain this game and convince people that they need to give me money for it.
You should try talking to people on a microphone twice a week for an hour, most of whom you've never met before.
Oh, I'm floundering through it right now, and I'm more or less no use, so I can't imagine.
Yeah, I was about to say. Though this is the first time, so getting off on a tangent here, this is actually the first, I think this is the first time we've ever actually spoken.
Yeah, I don't think we spoke at Creative South.
No, like I mean, if we did, it was for like maybe 10 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah. So,
hi.
Hi. Nice to officially meet you and have this conversation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So for people who are listening and going, what the heck are they talking about right now? Andy and I are in a Slack channel for Creative South, and, you know, we're on there all the time and we chat back and forth through that. But we've never actually, you know, picked up the phone or anything like that. And, you know, Creative South this year was the year that the podcast itself kicked off. So I was remarkably busier than I ever expected I was going to be.
No joke.
And barely got to see anybody, but somehow managed to meet like a ton of people, like 10 times more people than I normally meet. So,
yeah, Slack has been a huge help with that too. Just the fact that we're all keeping in touch after the fact.
Yeah. That's been really nice. And it's nice to be able to, you know, kind of bounce ideas off people and vent about rough days at work or vice versa and stuff like that. So getting back on topic. So yeah, you've got a full-time job, you know, that actually pays you.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing freelance that actually pays you.
Mm-hmm.
You have a wife and a kid that if you don't spend time, you're going to end up paying them.
Yes, in dividends. Absolutely. Yes.
With therapy for your daughter, when she gets older, which, you know, you are making Necronomicon cards, so let's face it, you're going to be doing that anyways.
Oh, yeah, she's screwed. She already lives in a house that's full of horror memorabilia and stuff anyways, so that's fine.
Sadly, she'll probably be the most well-adjusted child out there because of stuff like that.
That's my hope. I'm hoping this just means that she'll adjust to all the weird stuff early. She won't be afraid of the boogeyman. We won't have to deal with any of that stuff because it'll just be a commonplace part of her life to begin with.
Yeah. And then comes along Necronomicon cards, mm-hmm. where you're building the Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah. So I launched the Kickstarter campaign earlier this year. I was shooting for mid-spring because I read some probably completely made-up statistics that if you launch Kickstarter around like March to May, it has a higher rate of success. So,
okay.
Yeah, I have no idea why that is. I don't know if it's people get their tax returns and they're ready to blow them. I don't know. But
probably some just weird statistical anomaly that doesn't really actually mean anything.
100%. Yeah. But it worked for me because I launched the Kickstarter with a goal of $3,500 and it hit that goal. Like, I had it set for 31 days.
Wait, so your goal was $3,500?
Yeah, just $3,500.
Okay.
I just wanted to get enough money, like I said, to print out maybe 100 decks, maybe put a little money in my pocket for my time.
Sure.
But I was going for absolutely no visions of it actually going anywhere beyond that.
Your goal was just to not lose money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it hit that goal in the first 7 hours of the campaign. And it was pretty quick. I was I started up the campaign. I sent out some tweets. Like, I set up social media campaigns for the game itself. And then I already had Facebook fan page and Twitter account and everything for my, just mostly for my side work doing t-shirts and stuff. Sure. I had designed shirts for, I've had shirts printed on T-Fury and Threadless and Ripped Apparel and all those sites. So I had a small social media following from that. And then my wife and I went out to get some Mexican food or whatever, and I come home and my Kickstarter was already past the goal. So I had to frantically scramble and try to figure out how to put together some stretch goals and stuff because I hadn't even considered any of that.
So you're both squealing like a schoolgirl and shitting your pants at the same time.
Yes, exactly. pouring beer into my face as fast as I can and running around in circles. It's exactly, just picture exactly.
And meanwhile, your wife is still telling you to take out the trash.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, it went great. The rest of the month sailed along pretty smoothly. I found a few Facebook pages that had topics that were really close to the game. A lot of just horror-related Facebook groups. And the game has a lot of influence from the horror author H.P. Lovecraft.
Sure.
The father of modern horror writer in the 1940s. So I found some Facebook pages that were specifically H.P. Lovecraft related and either gently spammed those pages, or if it was specifically owned by somebody, I threw a little bit of money at a couple people to post on my behalf. But gotcha. I never spent more than like $150 on advertising through the whole campaign. But
So it was all word of mouth and just pumping it around to things that were related to it that got you that quick?
Yeah. I shot out emails to a bunch of tabletop gaming blogs and horror blogs and stuff like that, but almost no paid advertising. And by the end of the Kickstarter campaign, the final total, which is kind of misleading because Kickstarter takes a cut and Amazon Payments, who they use for their processing, takes a cut. And some people's credit cards never went through at all. But the final total on the Kickstarter itself was like 48,000 and something, which when you're shooting for $3,500 to see it finish up at almost 50 grand was mind blowing.
Yeah. So it goes through all that, and then where do you take it from there? Because we'll talk about who your distribution partner is in a minute, but how it kept growing from there in a way too.
It did. I think one of the things that's really helped it out a lot is, and this is a big mistake that a lot of people make with Kickstarter, is people don't keep the backers in the loop and they don't communicate much.
Gotcha.
And so I think one of the reasons why it has stayed alive and continued to grow to some extent, even though nobody's gotten the game yet, it's still at the manufacturer. I've been making a point to post on Kickstarter every 2 weeks, roughly. And constantly posting on social media and stuff. But when the Kickstarter first finished, I shot emails and private messages out to a ton of different game companies and the founders of different game companies, not necessarily looking for not necessarily trying to get distribution or anything like that, mostly just begging for advice, like getting on my knees and saying, please help me. This is way bigger than I had any intention of it getting. I'm totally screwed. what can you tell me? Please tell me anything you can.
Yeah.
And I actually got some really good responses from a few different companies, but like 2 weeks after I shot those emails out, I got an email from I'll just say her name. Her name's Carly. She's the head of accounts at Cards Against Humanity. And she was like, hey, you know, get on the phone sometime and chat. I can give you some advice. We can talk about some stuff, blah, blah, blah. No big. So I said, yeah, that sounds really fun. You're Cards Against Humanity. I would be a complete moron to not talk to you. And so we got on the phone and we had a chat. And by the end of the conversation, we were discussing the fact that they are trying to use some of their resources to help out other indie gamers and or indie game companies and do shipping and fulfillment. And like they have 30 warehouses worldwide. They have all these resources.
Holy cow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like it's
I did not realize they had gotten that big.
They're that big. And they just put out a really cool game called Secret Hitler, where a bunch of people get around, a bunch of people sit around a table and someone's a Nazi and you have to try to figure out who the Nazi is. And the, whoever's the Hitler quote unquote has to like bluff their way out of it. And, they handled fulfillment for, Exploding Kittens, the Oatmeals game that came out, last year. So they know what they're doing. They've got all these resources. So for some brand new indie game designer to shoot like 1,000 copies of a game to their warehouses would cost them nothing.
Right.
So yeah, I've worked out a deal with them where they're going to handle all the shipping and fulfillment. And they also have their own system for online sales. So they give me a widget that I put on my website, and that gives me a shopping cart and all that stuff, so I don't have to pay somebody else for that too.
So oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. So it's all contained in the one neat little system. So it's nice. And it feels like I'm part of a larger family all of a sudden, because my game's kind of nestled into their behemoth network.
Yeah, you've got their seal of approval, so that certainly doesn't hurt.
Not at
all.
And
then they help you out with all the back end stuff that I'm sure you don't really want to be dealing with in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah, and since,
or as you've said, never thought you'd have to be dealing with in the first place.
No, not at all. And since I'm already a web designer, like all their stuff just kind of integrates with the site that I was already building for myself anyway. So
awesome.
It's really nice to be a web designer and do all this other stuff, because it's like I don't have to pay somebody else to make this site, and I don't have to pay somebody else to do this, and it makes my life so much harder, because I try to do absolutely everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's,
I know that feeling.
But it's so much more fulfilling.
Yeah. So on top of that, Cards Against Humanity is, you know, basically wanting to send you places to rep your game as well, aren't they?
Well, I got an invite last week to fly out to PAX West in Seattle in September. They're going to have a big, they're going to have a space rented out at a theater beside, like adjacent to the actual convention. And
okay,
that space is going to be all Cards Against Humanity related stuff. And yeah, they were like, if you want to send out some of your game, we'll sell it for you. Or if you have time to fly out here, you can come out and sell it yourself and maybe sign some copies and teach people how to play and stuff. So
yeah, that word of mouth alone must be, you know, pretty awe inspiring for you.
Yeah, it's incredible. I can't imagine. I don't know. I'm speechless. it's one of the rare times that I feel speechless. Like I haven't wrapped my head around the fact that I'm going to be there and part of that scene and be like directly related to a powerhouse in the tabletop industry like Cards Against Humanity. Like it's a crazy feeling.
Sure. And you had mentioned that you had reached out to a bunch of like tabletop gaming sites and things like that. Had you reached out to the one that pops into my head right off is Will Wheaton with his Geek and Tabletop with Geek and Sundry. Had you reached out to like them over there? And
yeah, sure. I sent out emails to them and a bunch of different news blogs and stuff. I haven't heard much back from that specifically, but my plan is to send people like that copies of the actual game as soon as I get them in my hands so that I can try to get reviews on the site and stuff like that.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah. So it would definitely be a dream come true to see Will Wheaton play Necronomicards on a copy of, or on an episode of his podcast.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
He, from everything I've seen, he is, a fairly stand-up guy. And,
oh, for sure. He actually,
you know, if he doesn't like it, he's, you know, he'll tell you he doesn't like it, but if he does, he'll, you know.
Yeah. He actually owns, one of the t-shirts I designed.
Awesome.
I've seen a bunch of photos of him at different conventions wearing, it's another H.P. Lovecraft reference. It's a ridiculously nerdy shirt. It's the Miskatonic University Astronomy Club. It's like the astronomy club in an imaginary university that's in all the H.P. Lovecraft short stories.
Nice. Very nice. So with all this going on, when is the game expected to officially be released?
The original date that I gave on the Kickstarter was, well, on Kickstarter, you don't give a specific date. You just say a month. I had said October, mm-hmm. but with Cards Against Humanity helping me with the shipping and all that stuff, I'm actually expecting it to be out the door hopefully next month. If not next month, then early the month after that. Like it's moving a lot quicker than I'd originally expected it to.
So hopefully before October.
Before October, for sure.
Gotcha.
And as soon as the tough part is getting all of the Kickstarter awards, because since I broke the original goal so early, I had to add stretch goal on top of stretch goal on top of stretch goal on top of stretch goal.
Well, let's talk about that real quick. And this is my own selfish interest, because mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to set up some Patreon stuff for the podcast.
Awesome.
But a lot more work than I thought it was going to be.
Is.
Much like I'm sure the and I'll tell you about it off air. But
sure.
So far, the easy ones have been the bigger level stuff to figure out.
Yeah,
it's the small level stuff that I'm like, what the heck do I give somebody for $10?
Well,
where they don't feel gypped.
Yeah, that's
how did you set those goals?
For the super low level, like the first couple tiers that were below the level where you would actually get a copy of the game, I stuck with mostly digital stuff, which ended up being tougher to put together than I expected, because one was like an art book with some of the sketches from the game and stuff, like in progress sketches and early versions of some of the monster designs and stuff like that. And that took way more time to put together than I had expected it to. And then with every tier above $10, everybody gets a little postcard size print of the art from one of the cards, because one of the things that I got over and over and over again was people saying, I'm not into games like this at all, but I'm going to buy it because I like the art. So I figured it would make the most sense if I gave people versions of that art that they could actually frame if they were that into the art. And then, you know, higher levels, the typical Kickstarter stuff, and in t-shirts and in posters, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest piece of advice that I could ever give anyone who is ever considering doing a Kickstarter or anything like Kickstarter, never, no matter how low your expectations are, no matter how few people you expect to pledge to your Kickstarter, never say that you will give anyone a hand-drawn sketch. Because that was my biggest mistake.
I was about to say, sounds like you're speaking from experience.
I am, because anyone who pledged $35 or more to the Kickstarter gets a little sketch, like a little trading card size sketch.
Uh-huh.
And thankfully, the vast majority of the people who pledged around the $25 mark, which is the lowest tier where you actually get the game.
Sure.
But I'm still working my way through drawing about 400 little sketches. And
how are those calluses?
Yeah. That's my hand is not happy. The carpal tunnel could not be screaming louder right now.
I was about to say, have you gotten the carpal tunnel brace yet?
Oh yeah.
You need to start learning how to draw with your other hand now too.
That's a good idea. I could
never said it had to be good.
No, exactly. And I could say those are some kind of like special edition variant.
Yeah. This is my left-handed drawing. Mm-hmm.
Totally one of a kind. I would never be able to reproduce that if I wanted to.
No, start drawing with your feet too. Mm-hmm. Just go get four going all at once. Your daughter's 2.5. I'm sure she loves to play with markers.
Oh, she loves crayons. Yeah, that's a good idea.
These are personally signed and illustrated by. Yeah.
But yeah, it is really hard to put together those rewards. Just people have expectations of, since the original goal was so low, they expected a new stretch goal reward every few thousand dollars that got added on. So I had to fudge it a little bit and I bumped it up to every $5,000. I'm glad I did that because.
Yeah, that's probably a smart idea considering you, you made over 10 times
yeah,
the amount
times.
That you were. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But,
I mean, that's a good problem to have.
Oh, it's the best problem. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining at all. I'm loving every second of this, except for drawing all the sketches. Although it's been awesome drawing practice. I'm a much faster sketcher than I used to be.
See, yeah. you got to look at the upside of that.
Oh,
you
total,
can draw.
Total silver lining. I watched Todd McFarlane, the amazing comic artist for Spider-Man for years, and created Spawn mm-hmm. and a ton of other characters. He does these live videos on Facebook all the time that are just him being a huge goofball and drawing something really awesome, ridiculously fast. Like he'll sit down and go, I'm going to draw Wolverine. And then he draws Wolverine in like 3 minutes or less. And so I watched a bunch of those videos and like studied his techniques for drawing extremely quickly. And I
need to watch those.
They're really good. They're legitimately good videos. He's like the Bob Ross of comic artists. He sits there and makes little sound effects with his mouth while he's drawing stuff. It's really fun.
Cool. So it's launching hopefully in September at the latest, but you've still got through October in case shipping from somewhere overseas gets to be a pain in the butt. What does the future hold for Necronomicards and for Andy Hunt?
The future right now is trying to figure out how I can find time to work on new stuff for the game. I've already got ideas for, like expansion decks and stuff like that.
Okay. I was about to ask, are you planning on doing expansion decks? Cause I know some of your stretch goals had those in there, didn't they?
There were, 10 additional cards that everybody who contributed to the Kickstarter is getting.
Okay.
I won't be able to sell all of those cards because since I wasn't selling them, I was giving them away as a gift to Kickstarter backers. I got a little, I used some characters that I may not necessarily be able to use normally for a few of those cards. horror icon type stuff.
Sure. That may or may not require licensing that you don't want to discuss.
I didn't use any specific names or anything. I have no idea what you're talking about. But
that
did give me a lot of ideas for expansion cards that I could do. And I'm trying to come up with cards that would add new twists and turns to the game, new rules. Stuff like that. That's the hardest part so far, is just trying to figure out how to expand on the actual gameplay itself.
Gotcha.
But beyond that, it's just going to be trying to, hoping that people actually like it enough to buy the game beyond the Kickstarter. And I'm trying to find some cool podcasts to advertise on, stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be good. So, is this something that, once your initial run gets through and you've gotten this fulfillment and you're doing the expansion packs, are you going to try to get this into retailers as well?
That is still up in the air. I love the idea of being able to walk into a regular game store and buy this game, but at the same time, I don't know the full extent of what I would have to give up to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, aside from 2/3 of the profits, that's going to take a lot more research to figure out. And I have talked to a few companies about possibly doing distribution into retail and stuff like that. But a lot of the mm-hmm. people I talked to, their response was, well, I really wish you would come to me earlier on and talk to us before you kickstarted the game so we could have a bigger stake in this. So,
and your response is, well, that's why I didn't come to you before this early on.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the hard part is this is totally my baby. So I don't know if I can do that without having to give up too much, then absolutely. I would love for somebody to be able to walk into a super nerdy tabletop game store or a comic book shop or Barnes & Noble or whatever and pick up a copy of it.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. So if people want to find out more about Necronomicards, where can they find out about it online?
If they can figure out how to spell it, they can go to www.necronomicards.com. It's NecroNomiCards. Like, if you have ever watched the Evil Dead movies, or if you have ever read an H.P. Lovecraft story, there is the famous creepy Book of the Dead, the Necronomicon, bound in human flesh and inked in blood. So yeah, it's just that with the little twist of Necronomicards instead of Necronomicon. So they can find Necronomicards.com. They can search for it on Kickstarter and find the campaign, which also links to the website. There's also Necronomicards on Twitter and Facebook and wherever else anyone is inclined to go.
Gotcha. And if they want to find out more about you and your freelance stuff and all that, where can they find you?
They can find my main site is andyhuntdesigns.com, designs with an S on the end. And when you go there, you can see a bunch of my work, and there are links on there to find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, wherever.
All the social media stuff.
Yeah, all that fun stuff. And links to find places where they can buy my t-shirts if they are so inclined. Or if they search my name on Redbubble, I have a ton of shirts up on the website Redbubble.
Awesome. Cool. So we end every podcast by saying, go out and hug some necks.
Awesome.
So in your best creepy Necronomicard voice. Or you could just say, go out and hug some necks.
Go out and hug some necks.
There we go, Andy, and whatever that was that came from your soul. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me tonight.
Thanks for talking to me. That was fun.
You can find out more about Andy on Twitter and Dribbble at Andy Hunt. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him and to learn more about Necronomicards. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and our new Facebook page at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA or over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jack.ink/design and get up to $75 off your next order when you use promo code CSPodcast16. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.